The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk.
Thanks to spiritmotorgroup.ie. With secure online payments, buying your next used car has never been easier. With Spirit Motor Group.
Richard Boyd Barrett, People Before Profit TD for Dún Laoghaire. Good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
Now, NPHET, this National Public Health Emergency Team, its goings-on are minuted, but we don't really, really know what went on, do we?
No, we don't. I mean, it took basically about 6 weeks to get NPHET to publish their minutes, but since early March, one of the things that I've been asking for in writing, orally, to the Taoiseach at various briefings, in the Dáil, are for the minutes of the expert advisory group, which are the scientists and the experts who are advising NPHET. And I haven't got them. I've had multiple commitments to get these minutes. It seems to me any scrutiny and oversight and understanding of decisions that were made over the last couple of months would critically involve knowing what the actual expert advice was that was given to NPHET and to the government. And yet, for reasons that simply escape me but worry me, they have not, despite 2 months of requests, agreed to publish those minutes.
Okay. Let's just talk about the personnel, not by name, but just the kind of people who'd be in the advisory group, number one, you know, what professional expertise they would have versus NPHET, that one imagined would have professionals on it too. So are you suspecting there's conflict between the professionals, or are we looking at civil servants in NPHET and the experts on the other side who are scientists, and that there is not agreement between them how to proceed? Is that your suspicion?
Yes, I certainly think it would be the case that NPHET would be more heavily populated by people who worked for the HSE. I mean, they would be people with serious qualifications in medicine and other areas. I have no doubt about that. But the expert advisory group would be made up of practicing scientists and clinicians. Some of it, in the case of most of the subgroups, one or two from the subgroup would be on NPHET as well. But yes, you're talking about people who are practicing scientists and clinicians on the expert advisory group, and I would certainly like to know what advices, recommendations, and discussions that expert advisory group had about key decisions as things went along, and you know what advices they gave to NPHET. There were necessarily huge divergences, but there might well have been.
But do we understand how it worked? I mean, we saw the very dispiriting and dismaying news that there were 11 meetings of NPHET before there was a mention of nursing homes. We'll come back to that in a moment. But just about the methodology, suppose one of the themes was social distancing, for example. Another of the themes might be masks. Is it your understanding, or does anybody know, does NPHET say, we need to know about mask wearing, so we'll talk to the advisory group? In other words, we set them a task. Or we need to know about social distancing, so we set them a task. We need to know about the wisdom of opening or not schools, so we set them a task, and they come back with the expert answer. Is that how it worked, or how did it work?
That is how I suspect it worked. And I think in that context, we need to know what advices were given and were those advices followed. Because in a certain sense, it seems to me, although this is where we need this oversight and scrutiny of this whole structure, that NPHET probably balanced to some degree between advices it was given by the experts, resource issues that probably preoccupied the HSE itself and the government and whatever political priorities they may have had. And we need proper transparency. And as you say, I mean, for example, after questions started to be asked in the first couple of weeks of March about nursing homes, a specific subgroup was set up on elderly and vulnerable people. Now, it is amazing that such a subgroup didn't exist prior to those discussions, when it was known for a long period of time that the disease particularly affected the elderly. So it would seem to me that it was only because questions started to be asked and pressure started to be exerted that, as an afterthought, a subgroup was set up. But we don't know what that subgroup said, what it did, what recommendations it gave to NPHET, all of that. And there was a whole, indeed, there was a whole number of other subgroups. And we know little or nothing about what they did, what they discussed, what advices and recommendations they gave to NPHET. Now, it seems to me that, you know, basic accountability and transparency, which is supposed to be a critical part of a public health response, requires that we have all of the information and facts and minutes and advices and recommendations of those subgroups so we can assess and evaluate the decisions that NPHET made.
Generally speaking, I mean, it's useful in the event of another pandemic, another medical emergency, to know where mistakes were made. But are you interested in actually finding out particularly who made the decisions which turn out to be wrongheaded? We've made the point in this program again and again that from Italy, the word came, nursing homes. The people who are susceptible to this are the old and the ill and the immunocompromised. That news was there. And you ask yourself, where are we likely to find those kind of people in great numbers? And the answer is very simply, number one, nursing homes, old, in need of some medical care, and sometimes very, very ill. So that's where you'd mount your first defences, you would imagine. They didn't even think about it for 11 meetings.
Yeah, it is absolutely extraordinary. There seemed to be no plan whatsoever. And it was only very belatedly that they started to move into some sort of response in that area. And even there, it seemed to be very, very sluggish in terms of their intervention and oversight of what was happening in nursing homes. There seems to me little doubt. I'm not even sure if there was a geriatrician on NPHET up until mid-March. I couldn't swear to that now, and a detailed scrutiny of the minutes and the various subgroups would have to reveal that. But it was a massive oversight, and it's pretty inexplicable. But it's also not just about looking backwards, and it's not also just about looking forward to a possible future pandemic. This is about now, about lifting restrictions now. It's about the possibility of a second wave and whether we're prepared with the optimum response to deal with any of those eventualities, or indeed how we deal with social distancing over the coming weeks and months in particular areas where it could cause real difficulty. We need to know now, to deal with those things, what advices are coming from the experts, from the scientists that would populate the expert advisory group, the various subgroups to NPHET.
And the question of throwing older people to the wolves, I don't think we're that kind of population, you know, that we would do that deliberately. But the kindest way to look at what they've done to the populations in nursing homes is to say they overlooked them rather than deliberately put them in harm's way. But the questions, you know, did you raise this issue at the time it should have been raised, or are you only raising it in retrospect when you've seen the numbers? Half of the people or thereabouts who have died from this have died in nursing homes. I've used the phrase before, it's a terrible phrase, but the virus harvesting the old and vulnerable.
No, we were asking these questions actually from the end of February. The first NPHET briefing with the Oireachtas members was on the 20th of February. My office was the only office that sent a representative, amazingly, to that and asked questions about the advices, the expert advice they were getting. And they promised they would send us on answers to that. We, in writing, followed up with questions around the same things on the 25th of February, still no answers. Further written questions through an inquiry line that I demanded, essentially, I argued with the government, with Simon Harris, with Tony Holohan, and with Leo Varadkar at party leaders' briefings, needed to be set up. It was set up, and on the 16th, I submitted a whole series of questions around the advices they were getting, and a whole range of other issues, never
but
got
did
answers
you raise,
to any of those.
Did you raise the nursing homes issue at that time? That's what people are saying, that it's all very well to look at the outcome, the devastation caused by this virus, and we know now where it targeted most people. I suppose if you look at it, the people on the front line, the medical professionals, be they porters or doctors or nurses or cleaners or whatever they might be, and the old people. These are the two biggest target groups. Is it you looking at this and then coming back with looking for, you know, a political target, or were you actually active on those fronts at the time?
Yeah, sure. In fact, those questions were raised in the Dáil, in the first Dáil debate on coronavirus. And I was the person who asked for that debate at the business committee. And on those questions in the 16th, they included questions about what plans they had to deal with and protect the elderly and the vulnerable. And we never got any answers. And those questions were asked repeatedly through the inquiry line that was set up. It was called the COVID inquiry line. And to date, I still never got those answers. So there was a real deficit in communication with elected members of the Oireachtas for reasons I don't fully understand. Now, obviously, I mean, some of it, I, at the time, pardoned on the basis that they were dealing with the crisis. And obviously it was difficult. And nobody can expect perfection in these things. But yes, I do find it quite extraordinary that there doesn't seem to have been a plan for the elderly and the vulnerable. And this was being asked about, both by myself and others in the Dáil, at quite an early stage.
Okay, now,
and you know, as for an explanation, Pat, just to say, I personally believe the explanation was, one, there was a lack of oversight, a sort of planning for the elderly and the vulnerable. But secondly, it was the very, very fragmented nature of nursing home care in this country. That the fact that it wasn't part of an integrated national health service, and I say that not as that the private was better than the public and the public was better than the private. The problem was it wasn't an integrated national health service. It was fragmented and nobody was really in charge of anything.
Richard, there's a lot of rose-tinted looks at the public sector nursing homes, which by and large the current ones do a good job, because if, for example, you have an occupational therapist and one of those goes on maternity leave, generally speaking, another one will be brought in. If that happens in the private sector, they may not bring in an occupational therapist while that person's on maternity leave, because they don't have, if you like, the resources to do so, and they want to bring back the other person and all that kind of thing. But cast your mind back a few years, a couple of decades maybe, and you're looking at county homes and you're looking at the public sector doing a very, very bad job at looking after the elderly who are literally discarded into those homes. So, you know, when we criticise the advent of the private nursing home, there were reasons.
Yeah, and listen, the under-resourcing of the public health system is a huge problem as well. So I certainly don't have rose-tinted glasses. I mean, in fact, at every level coming into this crisis, our health system was desperately under-resourced and understaffed. But that problem is then compounded if it is also a deeply fragmented system. Some of it's run directly by the public health authorities. Some of it is run by voluntary and religious groups. Some of it is run by private groups. Therefore, it's not integrated. It's not cohesive. And nobody is quite sure who's in charge of what.
Now, we've had a lot of stuff from HICWA saying, oh, well, we were great. We spotted 200 institutions, both public and private, where there were issues, and a number that were specifically incapable of infection control. And they're saying, and we told the HSE and we told the Department of Health. And I'm thinking, yeah, that's grand. You told them. Well, what did you do? Did you threaten to shut them down? Because that's what you do if lives are put in danger. But they didn't.
Yeah. That is the problem, and I don't know the reasoning behind that, but I presume it was something like, what do we do if we shut them down? Where do these people go? But all of those problems can only be solved really with resources. And you look at, for example, the area of PPE. We were desperately scrambling around for PPE, and then we also had a big staffing shortage right across the health service, including care of the elderly, whether it was in the private or the public sector.
So you're actually getting to the nub of the problem. Here you have three groups of people. You've got ENFIT, who are charged with advising the government on the best way forward, bearing in mind all the deficiencies that they discover are there. I mean, who knew that we'd require such an amount of PPE, even in nursing homes, never mind in acute hospitals? Who knew that? Then we discover we don't have those resources. So the advisory group telling them what they should do, best practice. Then you've got ENFIT saying, well, that's what we'd love to do. We'd love to tell everyone to wear a mask. We don't have masks even for the professionals. So we can't advise that to the politicians. And then the politicians take the political decisions. And as you say, you know, perfection is the enemy of the possible.
Yes, I think that is roughly what happened, I suspect, in a whole number of areas, precisely that. But I do think we're entitled to know that. What were the experts saying? Because they would have been, I suspect, arguing for the, you know, the scientifically based and best and optimum response on a whole number of levels, whether it was nursing homes, whether it was testing, whether it was the, you know, the timing of the imposition of certain guidelines and so on. And then next down the line, you have the HSE and NPHET, who are balancing between that expert advice, but then seriously constrained by a very fragmented, disjointed system, a system that doesn't have resources, is under capacity, and then the politicians, who frankly are responsible for that, but who don't want to admit there's a big problem.
Okay, but if it turns out that they did the very best they could under the circumstances, in other words, ambushed by the shortage of PPE and so on, ambushed by the lack of intensive care units and so on, going in, doing the deal with the private hospitals, you know, in other words, scrambling to be prepared for what could have been much more catastrophic than it turned out to be so far, because we don't know if we're out of the woods yet. Are you prepared to say to Simon Harris and to the HSE and to HICWA and to the advisory committee and them all, my God, under the circumstances, you did well?
Listen, there is absolutely no doubt that, first of all, the frontline health workers across public and private did heroic work. I mean, truly heroic work under extremely difficult circumstances, often without the equipment and the PPE they needed. I have no doubt that the scientists and the clinicians and the expert advisor group, the populating NPHET and so on, would have been arguing for and proposing and aware of what needed to be done in order to best address it. I think ultimately, if fingers have to be pointed, or maybe lessons learned, not just fingers pointed, but lessons learned and action taken on foot of those lessons, it is ultimately about seeing what precisely were the problems and getting the politicians to change things. We need to have secure, and that means probably indigenously produced, supplies of PPE. We need to have secure supplies of ventilators. We need to have critically sufficient staffing capacity throughout our health system, both for care for the elderly, in the hospitals, at primary care level, at GP level, and so on, which are desperately lacking at ICU level, where we are, you know, we sailed dangerously close to the wind because our ICU was under capacity, under resourced. And much of that, I think, was also compounded by a deeply fragmented system. You need a cradle to the grave integrated system where the bits are joined up. And that clearly does not exist. And ultimately, it's politicians who are to blame for that and the parties that have ruled this country for decades.
Richard Boyd-Barrett, People Before Profit TD for Dún Laoghaire. Thank you very much for joining us.